the grade cricketer is a Twitter stream. It's about playing cricket at the grade level.
It's a tough, mean, dirty, dirty business being a grade cricketer.
A lot of cricketers, you know, that's all they know. They've done it since they're 10 and they have a deep-seated fear of change.
But the grade cricket is all about being the most alpha version of yourself as possible at all costs and at all times.
I don't bat or bowl. I just feel the gully, count the number of dot balls in a row, sledge 15-year-olds, make me feel better about myself.
Thanks champ.
Oh, no, you called me champ.
Hello and welcome to the Grade Cricketer Podcast. On today's show, Christmas is here and so is the Big Bash, as forgettable cricket now happens every day. So we celebrate Tom Banton's bombs, yellow leaders hats, sand on the SCG, Glenn Maxwell batting bareback, and Case Ahmad doing backflips in front of seven people in the Northern Territory. Boxing Day is, of course, around the corner, and nothing is more certain than the death of cricket in Melbourne and Sydney. So we remember when Jackson Bird was picked in last test and essentially retired last summer. Chris Green is on the show to talk Big Bash, IPL, circuits and Chop Kings, and there's all of your Christmas-related dreams and wishes in this week's hashtag AskTGC. Thanks to Budgie Smuggler. Christmas is a few days away, and our friends at Budgie Smuggler have you covered. Smugglers, towels, bum bags, flap hats, bucket hats, socks, kids' rashies, underwear. When your mum or love interest asks, what do you want for Christmas? You go and tell her budgiesmuggler.com and to go nuts. Use the code CHAMP for free shipping. One website to sort out every member of your family this Christmas. My name is Ian Higgins and I'm joined by Dave Edwards to my left and Sam Perry to my right. Boys, everyone's getting called off for air pollution, smoke, haze, too hot, too cold, not hot enough. What's the some of the weirdest ways you've been called off, or a weird way you've been called off? Anyone?
I've not really got a weird way of being called off per se. I've had weird ways of missing games before. Like I was selected as 12th man in a third grade semi-final in 2005. Mm-hmm. And instead of fulfilling those duties, I instead went to Blues and Roots in Byron Bay with my friends and saw Jack Johnson, REM, George Clinton, The Frames, yep. G-Love and Special Sauce,
right.
For example, Bright Eyes, Cake.
What a lineup.
Yeah. I then changed clubs. met Dave, played first grade 2 years later. And that club that I went to never made finals, so I had no problem going to subsequent Blues and Roots festivals in Easter.
So basically, like that moment was the beginning of the great cricketer.
Correct. That set from REM.
That was definitely the peak of the Blues and Roots festival as well, that mid-2000s era. G Love and Special Sauce, yeah. Shout out. Yeah. I mean,
if
I
you
can't.
Are listening.
I mean, personally, I remember, you know, breaking down on the M5, complete engine failure of my Toyota Camry, and then actually arriving at the game 2 hours later and being told, you've made that up. And then being banished to bat number 11 by a captain who I won't name. But back then, there weren't many. I mean, climate anxieties weren't quite a thing yet, were they? And, you know, natural disasters weren't happening every day like they are now. Mm. It was just when blokes had weddings. I remember we got a DM via Facebook about a team that had to forfeit a semi-final because the entire lineup was away on a Bucks weekend.
Yeah.
So literally, someone's just obviously scheduled a wedding, you know, at the pointy end of the season, just the whole team is fucked off on a Bucks.
I've seen the squad. We are no danger of making finals. This date is A-okay. The game didn't get called off, but I went off the field once. It was in England, and a caravan was on fire next to the ground, and this horrific smoke went across. So I can relate to the professional cricketers.
Of course.
And I know what they're going through right now.
It's tough. Like Scott Morrison, I've missed a game because I was on you know, a vacation with my family in Hawaii, you know, looking at active volcanoes in the Big Island.
Come back as soon as possible.
As soon as possible.
We did get a DM from Cameron Merchant,
Scott Morrison.
Many people may know from Married at First Sight. He let us. He plays first grade cricket at Manly. Quite a good player. He DM'd
good
us
player.
Your words.
Cheers, Tony.
He DM'd us to let us know that we've been mentioning Benson's Lane, that, you know, notorious ground out west in Sydney.
Yeah.
First grade ground's called Owen Earl.
Yeah.
And he DM'd us to let us know that a number of the boys from Manly, the sort of affluent north side beach suburb, instead of driving to the ground on the freeway on Saturday, decided to instead go on Friday and camp there.
Yeah,
right.
In tents.
That is loose.
Extremely loose. And so they camped before grade cricket, and then they were called off for air pollution issues halfway through the day. So grade cricket's just an extremely normal game at the moment, and we're happy to be here chronicling it.
Well, in that message Cam sent, he said, like, all the games are starting at 9 o'clock on the weekend. One of my friends told me that there was a guy who he was batting overnight from the first week, and he did not realise that it was a 9 a.m. start for week two. He thought it was a 12 o'clock.
Midday show.
Turns up, he's timed out. 3 hours earlier. Then gets a gets to go on the second dig. And yeah. He got a globe.
Yeah.
Got a globe.
Yeah, 150.
Yeah, smashed him. Batted really well. Good luck to him. He did really well. All right. Well, that's the wrap for the Big Bash. The Big Bash is back. Any first impressions 1 week into the competition? Well, a bit less than a week.
I feel like the teams are good and even this season. I feel like the wickets don't seem to be as shit this year. I feel like there's lots of runs and, you know, big bashes.
Yeah, big bashes.
So it's, you know, true to its name.
Yeah.
Spinners seem to be doing well. That's good. Although, just no one seems to be there. And now games are getting called off for smoke. So, you know.
Are you happier when spinners are taking wickets as opposed to the pacemen?
Yeah, it just pisses people off. You know what I mean? because you just... Yeah, commentators still think, like, deep down in our, like, very deep reserves, we still think spinners should be destroyed.
Yeah.
You know, oh, yeah. Time.
They bowl slow. You should hit them.
Exactly.
Whack them.
Oh, well, look, you know, I reckon they might line this bloke up.
Just get down the wicket.
Yeah, that's right. Like a subcontinental or like a Lamishan will come on or, you know, Case Ahmed or something. And some commentator will always say, like, oh, look, they'll probably target this bloke. Yeah, that bloke will end up with 4 for 5.
I don't know about you guys, but to me, and this is not an analysis at all, but just the uniforms seem brighter.
Yeah.
I did notice that.
Just me like suffering from like macular degeneration.
It's either or.
Yeah. Or like my son's like pressed the contrast button on the remote and it's just fucking pumped it up to the max, but it just feels brighter.
Yeah.
I don't know what that is.
Yeah, I don't know what it is.
I was sitting down last night watching the Heat beat the Sixers, and I just, when I first turned it on, it was, I just missed Chris Lynn's innings, but Matt Renshaw was batting with Jimmy Pearson, and I noticed Pearson's shirt was out, or so I thought, and I thought, well, this is interesting, because you know how, like, football players, soccer players, it was very traditional to always tuck your shirt in on the field, and they've just started to make Guernseys, same with the rugby, that aren't tucked in anymore, they're tight, they look, they flap out beyond the pants, but they're still tight,
They hug the torso nicely.
It turned out Pearson was wearing like the sleeveless sweater, like a vest over the top, and the batsmen are still tucking their shirts. I just wonder if that's a new evolution. Speaking of brighter Guernseys, is it, you know, we tackle the big issues here on TGC. I can see this happening. You know, there's a bling era coming in. There's all sorts of fashion stuff. I can see shirts coming out soon.
Isn't it funny the functionality of Guernseys? Like you look at like old rugby games where they're like. Like 90s, and it's just loose, and it's so easy for
wearing
three blokes inside those jerseys
just to like grab the jersey to tackle them.
Yeah.
Whereas like cricket doesn't need the aerodynamics of a slim fit tight shirt.
Yeah,
fuck, it looks good though, especially on Stoinis.
That's what made Ponting's innings at the start of his career so good, because he wore 3/4 sleeves for some fucking
reason.
Why would you ever need 3/4 sleeves?
Doesn't make any sense.
Let us know. Josh Phillippe's doing it. He's a good player.
Good little player.
He likes to wear... I don't know what he's doing with his shirt there. I don't know. This is what I'm thinking of. That's what the Big Bash does. It helps you focus on the minutiae.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One thing I noticed, that Sixers Hurricanes game, they played in Darwin. The game in Darwin. Never seen less people at a professional sporting event, ever.
Ever.
I want to know why. I couldn't have just been me. There would have been literally 28 people there.
Yeah. Why?
Which is fine. Like, but it's just... I don't understand why taking it to a regional place when there's clearly no interest in the cricket.
I think it's nice, you know, we represent the grade cricket sphere. I mean, it would remind me, if I was a professional player, of playing grade cricket in front of 28 blokes.
Yeah.
And I think they've been going out to some other regional areas. They went out to Country Victoria to some place called Moe. Is that how you say it? Moe. And last year, some of the locals stole some of the production kit.
Nice.
Ahead of the game, which is, again, a lot like grade cricket, because you turn up and there's fucking broken Smirnoff bottles in the stands and someone's like... spray painted on the white picket fence. There's always some kind of little disruption, which I think we lack now in the professional environment. Everything's so sanitized and corporatized. Yeah.
It's just a reminder to the players who are used to playing in front of 30, 40,000 BBL. Listen, this is where you could be if you don't hit runs.
Exactly.
Just a little round of that.
It's a pointed reminder.
It's a bit harsh when they get the players to umpire at square leg, though, I think.
It is helpful as we sit here in Surrey Hills in a studio just to pontificate over why regional Australia aren't participating in cricket as well. I think regional Australians typically
I think these
like
people
that
should be
that.
You know, privileged to be able to watch, you know, second tier BBL games on a weeknight.
It's like Brisbane having a test match. Same thing.
You get what you're given.
Jesus Christ, Tom Batten whacks him.
Yeah. I was having
The grace of his power is it's gorgeous.
Muhammad Ali, like, grace and power.
Yeah.
I was communicating with my father.
Communicating with your father.
Yeah. Normal way to say it. Yep. By that I mean I was texting him just before that game.
Texting Dad.
Before that inning started, I said, I watched Tom Banton, he's quite good. And he watched a ball or two and he just texted back, look at his grip, can't play through the offside. He hits 60 off 30 and he like reverse swept one like through square leg.
Right.
And then we started debating whether that was hit through the offside. I'm like, well, it wasn't a leg side. It's an offside shot. Yeah. Like, yeah, but it's not an offside shot. Well, yes, it is. It's just a different way of doing it, Dad.
Yeah.
Anyway, we haven't spoken since.
Christmas should be good.
Mm.
You said earlier, like, teams are quite balanced, quite even. Stars look probably the strongest, though. Stars look good. Maxwell, captain, batting without a lid, batting without a cap. He does say he did that in the IPL a few years ago, and he's been doing it ever since. So it's jarring to see a batsman not have any sort of hat wear, headwear.
It was a bit off the Stars in its like first few years because its entire brand was about being like Galacticos. You know, it was like Eddie Maguire. It was about being, you know, they're still banging on about being alpha over the Renegades who destroyed them in the final or humiliated them, I suppose.
Mm.
But I like them this year because they're just a little bit more humble, you know. And like the old Stars were kind of, it was all just about giving it a big whack, you know, that Darren Lehman, Brisbane Heat style. There was no real like nuance or like tactic kind of focus to the Stars, or so it seemed.
Mm.
They just got the big players. But now they got humbled in that final. Maxwell's batting without a lid. Stoinis is funny. Now we understand Zampa's very funny. There's something a bit nicer, just a bit more grounded about the Stars. So I'm happy to get behind them.
Mm. So they'll definitely win. They won't lose a game. You happy to stand by that?
I thought so, yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly what you said. Hey, so this year they're doing strategic timeouts in the Big Bash. That's a thing now. And they're also doing leaders' hats for the leading run scorer of the competition, leading wicket taker. We saw Callum Ferguson have that after one game. And he said, what was his quote, Pez? I feel like a bit of a knob wearing it.
Yeah. Not my colour, says the bloke wearing lime green. Yeah. I feel like a bit of a knob wearing it.
Yeah. Exactly. Mal Meninga used to say the same thing. Not my colour.
Are you guys pretty pumped for the strategic times out? It's really adds some dynamism to the game.
It is adding some, certainly a dynamic element to the game. Mm. I mean, it's strategic timeouts. To me, timeouts, there should be blokes in suits with clipboards.
Yep.
Or at least a whiteboard with, you know, a pen and the X's and O's and shit moving it around. Maybe it goes for like 30 seconds, multi-camera angle within the huddle.
Yep.
There's none of that. I saw, and granted they didn't take it, but in last night's game, you know, Chris Lynn was bombing them and there was a timeout taken. And I just saw like Darren Lehman was just there, arms crossed. He was wearing a tracksuit, just fucking chewing a bit of gum. Just mates, just five blokes in tracksuits. There was nothing. There was no strategy there. It was just, let's just. I know they didn't call the timeout, but they weren't really using that timeout, I felt, to any strategic effect. I felt
that's Lehman though, isn't it?
Or watch the ball.
Lehman's just, you know, give him a whack, boys. You know, give him a whack. Enjoy your cricket.
See ball, hit ball. Yeah. 28 seconds left. Do your own time.
Rip the top off a tinny. Yeah, have a laugh.
Kick back.
Get naked.
Yeah. Yeah.
What's the deal with cricket? Like the whole idea of like Big Bash T20s, is that like the speed of it? It's quick, it's entertaining.
It's
Why do you have to slow it down? Trying to find ways to slow it down.
I like how it's like look, you've got the opportunity now to take a strategic timeout between overs 7 to 13. If you don't take it, you're going to be enforced to do one because we need a 90-second ad break.
Yeah, we need an ad break. Mm. It's ads.
It's basically a new ad package opportunity for any brands and sponsors affiliated with the BBL.
The great cricket on Seven, mate. Hey, they made the there's an ODI squad going over to India. First of all, really exciting for the Australian team to be heading overseas to India during our own summer. Pretty exciting. It's actually probably how other countries feel when they come to Australia. But
we're exceptional.
That's a good point. Hanscom in, Khawaja out, Stoinis out.
Is anything
you're talking keywords now?
Yeah,
search phrases.
I just can't believe that we're losing our ODIs. I mean, the one thing that gave us comfort growing up was being able to turn on your TV in summer, in your summer, and see an ODI. And granted, now you need a subscription to do that, which is okay. I understand how modern media works. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you'd sit down on the couch, crack open a beer or a soft drink and be like, there's my national team in coloured uniform and they're playing cricket and it's January. And now they're going to go to India. We're fucking offshoring one dayers. I mean, this is a real crisis. What I want to go turn on the TV and go back to my youth and, you know, I'm seven again, to use a Tom Keneally reference from the 1997 ARL ad. I want to feel like I'm seven again. Yeah. I want that one day is to be on TV at all times in the summer, and they're not.
So you see a brand new ODI kit and they're thinking, I'm going to buy that.
Oh, is there a new kit?
No, it was just, no, the first ODI of the summer, you said the new kit, the players walking out there, exciting stuff.
Mm.
Pez, anything to look forward to in this ODI? Is
I'm looking forward to the... to the coffers being burnished by this trip to India to play three arbitrary ODI fixtures.
I hope
hopefully those coffers, you know, filter down to grassroots cricket. And I suspect they will, very much so.
And also,
so that players don't have to camp at O&L.
Yeah.
We can actually set up some villas.
I hope they're offsetting these flights with their carbon emissions on these flights.
Oh, you'd have to, especially.
They'd have to be, wouldn't they?
Well, cricket is suffering at the hands of climate change. If you read, every senior sports writer this morning, they're saying that, Peter Lawler wrote this morning in The Australian that Cricket Australia are exploring or setting themselves up to deal with the idea that play might be suspended or abandoned as a result of smoke at Boxing Day and the SCG.
Pez, we've always said it's always been hot. Because that game at Canberra the other night, abandoned, wasn't it? Abandoned. Like it's we obviously got a lot of listeners from overseas trying to appreciate how bad it is everywhere at the moment. People losing their lives and homes in
this
Adelaide.
Podcast studio. I can't even see you guys. It's like a 30-centimeter visibility. Yeah.
That's because
I can
I'm
only assume what your facial expressions are doing.
Hey, I've got a cigarette. That's why. That's been what hot. That is.
Well, we're recording this before we interview Chris Green, who was playing in that game, so we'll get first-hand info on what that was actually like. But always just good and normal to have games abandoned through to smoke and stuff. I mean, look, it's an ancient up and down thing, climate, so whatever. Just going through a bit of a down phase.
It was pretty cool yesterday, so that must be fake. Hey, so we're going to the Boxing Day test now. New Zealand cancelled their 2-day tour game in
smoke.
Melbourne in Friday due to extreme heat and player safety against the Victoria 11.
My God.
I think we might have already done the squads, haven't we? I feel like we might have done last week. Maybe, but Siddle's brought back into the squad. Don't know.
Siddle was playing. Just to go back to his camera thing, he was playing in the he was on the bench for Adelaide Strikers
Siddle.
versus Thunder. He had to be treated. He had to get medical treatment for smoke inhalation.
He wasn't normal. Playing.
Yeah, he wasn't normal. Playing, and he had to get medical treatment. Again, normal stuff.
So there shouldn't be any, problems that we could foresee by, spectators in the stands, if the same conditions kind of present themselves.
That's just a mega fire seven times the size of Singapore that's been burning northwest of Sydney since late October.
At least we can use climate to get out of cricket. It's a new modern excuse.
Good point.
Wake up in the morning. What's the opposite of the Pepsi challenge? What do you fucking do there? Wake up in the morning, fuck, it's a bit hot.
Yeah. How many bushfires can you start?
With that, so Trent Bolt, I think, is going to be in the squad. He looks like he's going to make it. That's something for New Zealand to hang on to. I mean, I guess just everything about this Boxing Day, and to be fair, the SCG, just the wicket is everything about this. Like, we saw the SCG game the other night. There's fucking sand everywhere in the outfield. Yeah. The wicket is awful at the SCG.
Good gig from you too, though.
Good gig. Bono was excellent. Yeah, really worth it.
Worth the 200.
Exactly. So I kind of feel like you're talking about squads and stuff. Well, I'm talking about squads, and it's just like, does any of this matter? Because the wicket is so bad, they can play fucking anyone. And it's like, is a result possible?
Yeah, the MCG wicket has underwhelmed for about 40 years on the trot, and now it particularly underwhelms because of its concrete-based drop-in scenario. So, but there's still some word coming out from the curators that there may well be life in the wicket. So you're always a bit reluctant to say, it's definitely going to suck. But, if the past is a predictor of the future, then yeah. Every team is doing its, putting its component parts together. Australia have rebuilt. They've got a pretty good batting order now. Good bowlers. Pattinson's coming in. I saw the analogy this morning that he's going to be bringing the heat, which I think is an unfortunate analogy to use at this moment in time.
Does he bring his heat training gear?
Oh, that's maybe what they were referring to. And nevertheless, which I've been thrown by that. New Zealand, they're number two in the world. They've figured out some plans to restrict Australia.
Yeah, they got plans.
Yeah, they got plans. They've got guys who bowl short balls at just the right pace and leg theory fields and stuff, and Trent Bolt's coming back in. So everyone's doing their best.
Yep.
They're fast
Melbourne
and quick
will, Melbourne
now,
will go to the game. There's 100, it's sold out. New Zealanders are coming over, 100,000. Everyone's doing their best.
Is it sold out?
Yeah, everyone's doing their best to make Boxing Day day one good. Yeah, but they're just going to be playing on fucking dead deck.
All I can see is last year, Cummins buying that first over and two balls in, two bounces to Payne. And I was like, that's ruined Christmas.
Yeah.
Christmas is cancelled.
Being yesterday, it's ruined.
It ruined.
Yeah, a really good day.
I had such a good day.
Yeah.
This has completely ruined it. Another word ruined by cricket. Hey, so New Zealand have got, they've called in Kyle Jamieson. To replace Lachie Ferguson, who obviously unfortunately injured after his debut test.
Doing their best, New Zealand.
So he's an uncapped Auckland pace bowler who played for New Zealand A against England earlier this summer.
Right.
Has 5 wickets from 3 first-class matches.
Nice.
But, and I quote, has height.
Yeah.
Right.
Are New Zealand about to make a height-based selection at the MCG?
Yep.
Well, I like it if they are.
That's good.
Is he quick as well, or is he just tall?
I think just tall.
Just height.
Yep.
How fast is he?
It doesn't
80
matter.
Kilometers.
Doesn't matter. He's fucking massive.
7'3", 80 yeah. kilometers. He's Yao Ming.
I thought the whole thing was that, like, Neil Wagner was like, his shortness made his short ball more effective. I don't know.
Oh, can't keep up. Yeah.
But New Zealand are producing like quick and tall, fast bowlers. I remember in like the 90s, everyone was like 5'8" and bowled like 108 kilometers. Like
Danny Morrison.
Chris Harris.
Yeah.
Those were barely, they were slow mediums back when that was literally a descriptor of the style of pace that you bowled. No one bowls slow mediums anymore.
Yeah.
And it's a shame.
It's an art form. They're all quick now with levers.
Yeah. They're trying their best. Everyone's bringing their own stuff. He goes, you know, like Kyle Jamison. Okay, now I've got an unknown into the squad.
All narratives.
So there's a new present to unwrap.
Mm.
So it's just down to the wicket now.
Whatever happened to Jackson Bird? Who played his last test at the MCG last year? They brought him into the squad. Have a bowl on this. Give the real bowlers a rest.
Mm.
And he hasn't played test again.
He was a cart horse.
He was a cart horse, yeah. Australia's team the same. Pattinson in, obviously for Hazelwood. Same.
Pattinson in, bringing the heat. Australia playing, you know, uncompromising cricket. A number of hundreds. I mean, Warner came out yesterday saying, you've just got to bat big and bat once.
Right.
And that's pretty much what they're trying
to do. Oh, that's so fucking grim. So one team's going to get 800.
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, fuck
it's absolute opposite to what an ideal test match is, which is 300 apiece in the first innings and then a competitive second innings chase.
What if
here we go.
It's a game? What if it's actually a close match and the wicket does something? We've all lowered our expectations so much.
Yeah.
Imagine if you had this game where, like, it's a non-top three team, like, non-top three fixture, right? But everything else is going well. New Zealand are doing well. They've... you know, made the World Cup final. Kane Williamson's good. The bowlers have got plans. They've worked out Steve Smith. Australia's now coming back. Boxing Day, 100,000 people.
Mm.
Like, it should be a recipe for something good. Imagine a really good game.
Should be.
Melbourne's putting everything together. They're rolling out the AFL identities. You know, so viewers are tuning in.
Yeah.
Imagine if it's some sort of close game. It's not going to happen, is it?
In the Big Bash.
No.
In the Big Bash.
You don't care when you go to the MCG. It's just about the match day experience. It's not about what happens on the field. It's about all the, you know, the
it's a cultural thing, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's the nice seats that you have, you know, the lovely options you have at the bar, the corporate networking opportunities that you have if you're in a corporate box lucky enough to be.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of things that can happen besides the cricket, and we should focus on those more, I think.
We just hold no hope at all.
No hope.
This is going to be
hopeless.
A good match. Mm. Have we? Like, we've been conditioned into going, no, this is just an exhibition. This is a fucking military parade. Like, this is just Australia just bringing out its guns. Here's Labuschagne. Here's Smith. Here's Warner. Like, enjoy the exhibition,
all walking
guys.
In unison.
Yeah, we're not enjoying it as an actual contest. No.
I think there actually is a military parade happening during the lunch break on day one.
Well, Morrison has to distract people somehow.
He's got to distract them.
What, Ben Robert Smith. Brandish his DC medal. We're all going to salute him.
Topical. Would you guys prefer a game which was over in 2 days and just wild wicket, fucking wild, doing everything, kind of semi-dangerous, like no one gets hurt,
yes.
but like it's kind of a little bit like the threat is there, you know, as opposed to 5 days draw. Of course, you would win, right? Yeah. It's not an even comparison.
It's not an even comparison.
Just mainly because you just want to see how Australia reacts.
Yeah.
You know, just as Australia going,
Oh, shit.
It'd be good if the game was over in 2 days, but then they still had to play out the other 3 days and they did whatever they wanted and it was just on TV. So maybe they're just having a centre wicket or something the other 3 days.
Steve Smith.
I'd be open to that.
He goes, I'm looking forward to just now witnessing Australia's use of its DRS now that they've got a DRS doctor.
Yeah, so what's this about?
So Ben Horne reported this in the news limited papers recently, but obviously Australia's botched 22 referrals out of 24, and a specialist in control systems, Dr. Obaid Rahman, I think that's how you say his name.
Eddie Obaid?
He got in touch with... not Eddie Obaid, Dr. Obaid Rahman.
Okay,
different person.
Got in touch with Justin Langer. After becoming convinced Australia's method for using DRS was fundamentally flawed. So I just like the idea. He's just called Justin Langer and said, I can fix this for you, just a member of the public.
Yeah.
Langer got him in, did an hour and a half presentation, and just said, look, problem with you guys is you're asking yourselves the wrong question.
Oh, here we go.
So he
that's
says, like,
classic sales technique.
Yeah.
he's like, they just, like, so what happened was that the system until this point was Payne just asking the bowler if it was out or not.
Yep.
Which makes it all random rather than asking why didn't the umpire give it out? That was the big crux of the problem, he said.
Right.
And now since then, he's told them that they've got like a four-pronged system around who's allowed to debate stuff for wickets. He's like, you know, the bowler has a conflict of interest, they're not allowed to be involved.
Yep.
The keeper is, blah, 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 blah. And now he's also developed an app for the players to use.
Got to always
to
have a selling
their,
point.
With their DRS trajectory. Right. So, like, you know, is it an LBW? Well, it's an app for that.
This is incredible.
It's amazing.
I like the idea that this guy's literally called Justin Langer, and he's gone, like, sell me this pen.
Yeah.
Like, fucking
Jordan. How did he contact you? You just go to, like, cricket.com.au.
Just inquiries.
Contact us.
Yeah.
At Justin.
When you go to the website, it says contact us. It actually goes straight to Langer.
I am not a robot. You have to type in the recapture thing. It's
The traffic light's kind of in one box. It's
always so hard.
Yeah. All right, we've got Chris Green coming in the studio in a second, and after that, hashtag ask TJC. Time for another mini debate here on The Great Cricketer. All thanks to KO Minis. KO Minis let you stream every catch, every six, and every wicket from an entire match or day's play in less than half an hour. It's the quickest way to watch all the best bits when it suits you. Today's topic, lads. Usman Khawaja, left out of the ODI squad. Will he ever play for Australia again? Dave Edwards, the floor is yours.
Look, here goes. I think injustices in sport are important.
Mm-hmm.
And look, every generation every generation must have at least two or three criminally underselected players. Okay. You know, in the face of overwhelming data.
Yes.
And rightly or wrongly, Khawaja is our guy now for the late 2010s, early 2020s. Mm-hmm. I mean, we'll always wonder what he's done to offend the selectors. His data is good. Why can't the boys get around him? I mean, does he not have the right pheromones?
Mm.
I mean, that's always something very important. Is it because he looks too casual? Aesthetics.
Mm. Yep.
I mean, you know, perception is reality. Reality isn't reality. Mm-hmm. Perception in cricket is reality. And, you know, another side product of not selecting him could be to, you know, better the domestic competition. What better way to increase the standard of the Sheffield Shield than, you know, to... Because Sheffield Shield cricket is harder than Test cricket anyway.
Yeah, good point.
So why not play your best players in the Shield cricket?
That's a good point. So he could fall into the trap of like a Jamie Siddons, Martin Love, Dean Jones, these guys who, these guys who like play very well at domestic level.
I think so. I think it's my biggest point, I guess, is that it's important to have someone face a level of injustice. And Khawaja, you know, not his problem, but it's unfortunate that he's going to be the guy.
He could be Australia's Gary Balance. Right. Smashes him.
So you think he has played his last game for Australia?
I think, you know, it's not just about him. It's about cricket. And I think he probably would respect the fact that, you know, this has to happen.
Oh, yes.
It's not about him. Yeah. It's about cricket.
Yeah. You must be the unjustly, omitted player.
It's not a watertight argument.
But it's an argument.
Yeah, it's an argument.
I think you bang
and
on.
Well made. Pez.
I think you bang on, but I disagree. per the concept of this. Well, look, what's been difficult for Usman is the emergence of Manus Labuschagne. Usman is now the old girlfriend. Labuschagne is the new number three.
Mm-hmm.
There is an argument. I still think that Usman is, like, you've gun to your head. There's a gun at your head now.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine there's a gun at your head or your mum's head.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Gracious. Who opens with David Warner to save your life? It's not Joe Burns in Australia for me.
No, it's
not. I think Usman, if just one-off innings, Usman's going to score more runs than Joe Burns. I think he is the best. However, he's the best to open.
Mm.
However, Khawaja now needs a Kadich-esque Indian summer to regain selection in the side. And the question is, not has he played his last test, the question is, does Khawaja have a Kadich-esque Indian summer in him?
But he's not going to India, that's the thing.
Indian summer is a...
Who's holding the gun?
Well, exactly. Kevin Roberts.
Dean Jones.
So I'm not sure if he does have an Indian summer in him, a Kadich-esque one, because he's too self-aware to have an Indian summer.
Right.
It's a compliment. You know, he has interest in social matters, Usman. He's a pilot. He has fashion sensibilities. He has artistic sensibilities.
Mm-hmm.
You know, look at his coin toss the other day. That was art.
Yes.
He thinks about these things. He's not single-mindedly focused on playing for Australia again. If he wants to, he can. And so I say that Usman will play for Australia again, but only if he wants to. If he really wants to. And if he doesn't want to, I wouldn't blame him. Cricket's fucking hard and boring.
Just thinking about like Steve Smith catch that he took off Kane Williamson was like, was it the catch of the summer? People thought, was it the moment of the summer? Nah. Khawaja's coin toss where he just fucking threw that thing 80 metres in the air, that was good. That was funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, really cost him his livelihood and his career, but made me laugh. Well, that's another mini debate for KO Minis. KO lets you stream all the action from the summer of cricket with no ad breaks during live play. Visit kosports.com.au or download the app to start your 14-day free trial. 2020 is right around the corner, and I bet you're already thinking about what you didn't achieve in 2019 and what you want to get up to in 2020. And if you want to work towards being your best self in 2020, then Blinkist is for you. Now, Blinkist is for anyone who cares about learning but doesn't have a lot of spare time. Blinkist takes the key insights from over 3,000 nonfiction bestsellers in over 27 different categories and gathers them together in 15-minute blinks. That's text and audio explainers that help you understand more about the core ideas of those books. Now, there's already 12 million people across the world using Blinkist already to deepen their knowledge in 27 different categories of nonfiction. There's bestsellers from The Barefoot Investor by Scott Pope to The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck by Mark Manson. It's all there. And you can listen to Blinkist whenever you're on the go. If you're commuting to work, you're cooking dinner, you're driving the car, you're walking the dog, wherever you are, it's all right there. Now, Blinkist has a special offer just for our audience at the Great Cricketer Podcast here. Now, if you go to blinkist.com/cricket to start your free 7-day trial and get 25% off a Blinkist premium membership. That's Blinkist, spelt Blinkist, blinkist.com/cricket to get 25% off and start a 7-day free trial. That's blinkist.com/cricket.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, ladies and gentlemen, you know him as the miserly, spinning, hard-hitting, must-be-male model with an unbelievable skin regime, T20 whiz from the Thunder and 17 other clubs, including most recently being picked up in the IPL. Chris Green joins us in the studio today. Chris, welcome.
Thank you. What an intro.
Let's jump straight in. I'm keen to understand this T20 circuit. First up, we're in the studio with this T20 maestro. Mm. When we talk to first-class guys or test guys, we understand they hold a very exalted status, like at their grade club. But can you tell us about the status that the good-looking, rich T20 king holds in grade cricket? You play for Manly,
yeah?
Is that right? So tell us about where you sit in that hierarchy. It's a new realm.
Fucking king.
How do you answer?
I'm hardly there, to be honest.
Nice. Good start.
Yeah. So the other day I actually went to grade training, rocked up, padded up.
Accidentally.
Padded up straight away, went in, batted through two rotations. So I got to run my show a little bit. I was very lucky.
Did you notice more and more people coming up to get a good optic behind you and behind you?
Yeah.
Was there a crowd that kind of gathered while you hit the ball? No crowd.
Not when I'm bat.
First net, obviously.
There's a lot of blokes wanting to bowl at me, and they keep asking the question whether is it T20 practice or 4-day practice. I was like, well, I haven't played a 4-day practice in my life, so what's the point?
Yeah. That's interesting. Yeah, when you bat these days and you hit a lofted shot, does the bowlers have to know what format of cricket you're batting fictionally?
Oh, is it T20? I didn't know. Yeah. I wouldn't bowl that length.
Massive, field would have been wickets, power play was on.
Yeah, I hit it over the head and they're like, oh, it's T20, isn't
it? Yeah. So you can never get out of nets anymore, basically. It was no ball, bowled, no ball.
No.
And are we talking thunder lid at training?
Yeah, what's a lid? What kid are we looking at?
Just blank lid.
What's blank lid? What do you mean?
No bad.
Home brand.
Just a normal Missouri.
Just from Franklin's.
I couldn't do that.
Oh, so you actually have specific lids for when you're at training where you don't want to show your status kind of thing. So you don't wear the club lid, you just wear
I don't have a Manly badge on my lid. It's just a plain helmet.
That's a bit of a come get me from other clubs. Yeah. Just I'm available.
I am available. Yeah. Best interest.
Yeah. It's when we do a podcast without a sponsor. There's ad space available.
It's all exactly the same. Yeah. We're talking about Brad Hodge and who did he play from the IPL?
Everyone.
Who didn't he
Everyone,
play for,
And he was wearing his IPL lid playing park cricket on Astro.
Mm. Unbelievable.
Yeah. And you've just been picked up in the IPL, obviously. Can we just get into that?
I have to keep that helmet then.
tell us about getting picked up in the IPL. So, the auction was the other day. We heard Ricky Ponting on commentary, very giddy, talking to Aaron Finch.
He was excited
on
to do
air.
So, yeah.
Finch playing in a match for the Melbourne Renegades, and Ponting could not contain his glee at Finch being picked up and said, do you want to know? And Finch is like, no, I'd rather finish the game, pal.
Yeah. He palled him. Palled Ricky Ponting.
Should have champed him.
We may as well. It's a distant cousin.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, what's it like getting picked up in the IPL? Just run us through that process.
It's very surreal. It's still sinking in, to be fair. I don't know if it ever will.
He will.
But
I can tell you it will.
Yeah. Trust Dave, it will.
When you're playing, it'll have sunk in because you're actually playing the game. Okay, that's cool. When it happens.
Cool, that's good to know.
No, in these interviews, we just chat. So.
Yeah. Do you want to answer the question?
Not really. Not really, no.
It's all good.
All right, no, go on. Tell us.
Yeah, I'll go back. So it was very very surreal. We obviously played the game against the Renegades. I went down. Oh, I purposely gave myself the best chance possible. So I went in at the base price, the bottom. So I came through very late. We were just hanging out after the game. It was about 20 past one in the morning. I struggled to sleep at the best of times and got the notification through on my phone, got a message from Baz McCullum saying welcome to the team, which was pretty cool. And then, yeah, I don't know.
Was it a personalised message? Did he use your name or was it just the same one?
Template.
Dear Chris. High player.
High player.
High player. Welcome to KKR.
So the rumours are true, you are a player.
It was with an A, yeah, player.
I saw that someone had done the maths and be playing with Pat Cummins. This year, and someone did the maths that he is earning 75 times more than you.
I thought it was 80.
Is it?
Yeah.
Pre-tax.
Are you looking forward to him blanking you at training or throwing balls to him and that sort of thing?
Well, I just plan on not spending a cent for 2 months living in his pocket. Yeah. I think he's got a fair bit to spend. It'd be pretty cool. I think he deserves it, obviously. Number one bowler in the world. And when you bowl that quick, I think you can set a high bar. And it was pretty cool to watch the auction when his name came out. They were just like fighting over him.
Mm. It's a little bit weird how like a lot of the IPL is based around like what players earn. Like that's a really big talking point in the competition. What you go for. Is that kind of strange? I know it's your first year.
Same in great cricket. You know, how much is this bloke playing? Getting paid on the table. Yeah. $100, $200.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like some 150 a game. Yeah.
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 Dollar a run?
I guess
$650,000 a run.
So we've come a long way since Matt Phelps got his daughter to uni or something. That's why he went to Sydney Uni. Anyway.
I think he's about 10 grand a ball, Pat, for the IPL. So it's not bad.
Yeah. Good work if you can get it.
But there's obviously a lot of talk around the auction. I think I'm like a dollar a ball, which is great.
Yeah.
When I play.
You concerned that's going to open you up to some kind of demeaning nicknames like bargain basement or base price? Base price. I'm just spitballing.
Yeah, base price.
Someone want to help me out?
Why have you got this ring down?
There's a lot of call.
I don't think Chris would be concerned.
I think he's very happy playing the IPL. Yeah. I mean, you're probably quite used to the conditions here playing in smoke. I mean, going over to India where there's obviously some issues around visibility and air pollution. Are you looking forward to that?
Yeah, look, I think it's going to be awesome. I think it's going to be awesome. I think that every experience that comes with playing cricket in India is going to be so exciting. Yep. Like going for dinner, going to the games. I think we're Eden Gardens, so it's obviously the pinnacle of Indian cricket, which would be really cool to witness and experience. So I'm super excited.
Mm-hmm. You've kind of been like a bit of a... like a fixture now in the BBL. Like I think a lot of people recognize you. You're now like walking around with a microphone and interviewing a few guys as well. And you know, your stats are starting to hold up, or they have for a long time. So, and I think you said the other day, or people have started to say that like, you know, you're on Trevor Holmes's radar. How does that manifest, you know, like for national selection? Like how do you get on someone's radar? Is that like a figure of speech, or is there a radar there? And he's like got in touch with you and said, you know, you're being watched now.
Radar O'Reilly from MASH gives you a call and says, this bloke's got it.
What?
It's the AFP.
Oh, look, I think it's an interesting one. Obviously, I'm still burgling my way bowling off spin around the wicket in the Big Bash and... yeah, I still don't know how I don't get hit for more runs, but obviously I get away with a few and can get a few blokes caught at long on and deep in wicket, which is always handy. It's exciting. The last few years, obviously contributing to the team's success and, more recently had a conversation with Trevor about, I guess, where I fit in. And he said, look, you know, T20, we like the experience you're getting around the world, and you're obviously doing quite well. We're happy with Adam and Ashton at the moment. They're doing a really good job, but continue to put them under pressure. And with the World Cup on the horizon, it obviously gives yourself the best chance.
And you've signed a kind of a long-term deal with the Thunder, haven't you?
Kind of.
Which is kind of anathema to the T20 mercenary cricketer who kind of jumps around the world. I mean, you're doing that, obviously, but domestically, you've signed quite a long-term deal. How do you, you know, what kind of drove that decision to stick with, you know, the Thunder through thick and thin, at least for the next 6 years?
Yeah, it's obviously pretty cool. It's very rare to get security in our game, as you say, particularly in the short format. But I jumped it at the Thunder, wanted to sign a long-term deal.
So you're a monogamous T20 cricketer.
Yeah.
It's a new breed.
Yeah. So they basically said, look, we want to sign you. I said, I'm so keen to be a one club player. It's something that I'd love to do.
You didn't feel like playing a bit of hardball? Like, I'm not sure.
No, it was a pretty easy decision, to be fair. They were the first team that gave me that opportunity when I was just playing club cricket and to play on the big stage. So I jumped at it.
Same before that you have played all over the world. You've been in the Caribbean. You played in Pakistan as well, right? You're actually going back to Pakistan in February, a couple of months?
Not at the moment. I didn't get picked up. So the last 3 years I've gone as a replacement player. So I'm hoping 4 out of 4.
Yeah.
But we'll see.
Pakistan, if you're listening.
Yeah. Last time we met, we were talking about you playing in Pakistan. It's kind of like it's a strange place. Obviously, they've just got their test match status. Well, they're playing test matches at the moment against Sri Lanka there. Kind of a scary, weird, dangerous place at the same time, Pakistan, right? Like your experiences playing
over there. Yeah, I've had two years. I've gone for a game each time, and it's been like 24 hours in and out. So you got off the plane from Dubai, landed in Lahore my first year, and got ushered off on a normal passenger plane, ushered off first into this bulletproof, bomb resistant minibus where the glass is like really, really thick, and you're just sort of sitting there. There's heaps of dudes with army guns and stuff around you, and turrets on top of their cars. We'd sat there for I reckon about half an hour, didn't move. I was like, well, this is a bit scary. We got told there's gonna be like helicopters, everything, like loads of cars, and there's just like, you know, 30 dudes, and we were like, okay, well, this isn't enough, I wanted more. We were really intimidated by it because they said, look, it is going to be okay, but there's going to be like really enhanced security. So we sat there half an hour, drove down the runway in the end and outside, and it was just like flashing lights, armored trucks, 3 helicopters over the top.
Fuck.
But like these boats down these, I thought they were just sewage canals, but there were boats going down. We got to our hotel. There were sentries out the front, snipers on the rooftop.
Jesus.
There was gosh. Like, it was so like, there was so many people, but it made you even more nervous because there was so much presence of, I guess, guns and stuff. I'd never seen that before. So it was crazy. The next year, it was sort of the same, but it come down a few scales. But actually in the stadiums was incredible, like the noise. They were so I've never been thanked so many times by strangers just for going, so it was pretty cool to be a part of.
Can you kind of talk us through the different noises that you hear in a stadium over there versus here? I mean, there are different kind of almost imperceptible noise patterns that you pick up in an Australian venue versus the subcontinent.
Like you get a goal in soccer in England, it'll be more like whereas like in South America it's like more of a roar. Like,
goal.
Can you just run us through that?
Can you make some noises now?
Pakistan is just like a constant
just guns going off.
No.
Are we talking about the thunder? We're mixing between.
What's the noise? Best noise? It's sort of like a screaming.
Right.
Like guttural men screaming sort of thing.
Oh my god.
In symphony excitement. Of male screams constantly ringing through your ears.
Like a little bit of hoi hoi hoi, like little bit of that noise.
So like on Cricket 96.
Where else? England was just like, they just sing along, which was cool. So they play a bit of music, they stop the music, and the crowd keeps singing while the over runs out. So that's awesome.
You can hear the Sweet chinking Caroline. Of ices in glasses as well, if you listen very carefully.
Caribbean, it's just like a party.
Yep.
There's not much noise. They're just partying the stands, drinking rum. They always have a DJ at the ground. And like
that song Champions always playing for some reason. DJ Bravo.
And then here's cool. We're probably like, I don't know, there's no definitive noise, but it's a little bit like, I reckon we're the most polite watchers. When the cricket's actually going, it's quite quiet. Sometimes you can hear a pin drop, and then if you have a good ground announcer, they can sort of get it going, which is cool.
Yeah, right. Actually, ground announcer. Ground announcer plays a part. Yeah. Interesting. There's a role for us there somewhere. Sorry, I was literally talking to Chris. Like, work opportunities.
So you've got lots of experience at different T20 tournaments. Like in terms of quality, like of playing quality, skill, where's the BBL rate? And this is more one that I just think listeners might be keen to learn about how good other tournaments might be, because you know this is Australia, so we only care about our own little corner of the earth. Where the BBL rate in relation to others,
how much better is it here than everywhere else?
This podcast is geo-blocked outside of Australia, so no one's gonna listen to it.
I mean, obviously it's like for me personally there's a lot of bias around it because I enjoy it for different reasons, having friends and family able to watch. It is because of the wickets and the grounds, like the wickets are consistently better here. The Caribbean, my first year we had 5 overseas players on the field, so and then you sort of have when you all the West Indian players were available. So you sort of have three or four that are playing or have played for the West Indies. So there's your like eight or nine players that are sort of world class, and then you've got two up and comers. So I found that really strong, and obviously on tough conditions in different pitches. England was sort of similar to here. It's obviously a little bit more. It's a bit more dispersed, I guess, with the talent with more counties. Canada was almost all overseas players, so that was good standard.
Mm.
With small grounds and the wicket was decent. So it's like
it's possible that you could turn up to a T20 match in Canada and think, I'm more likely to get pogoed here, you know, than in the BBL.
100%. I got pogoed plenty of times in Canada.
People
still saying pogoed?
Maybe. Still a nice flex.
Revealing a lot about yourself there.
We'll open that up.
Pogoed. Cool.
What's the word that people are using these days for getting absolutely pumped?
Yeah, what's the verb for getting smashed?
Verb.
Greened. Sorry.
Boomed?
Boomed.
Yeah, boom.
Is that about boomers?
No.
Well, maybe we do get boomed a lot economically.
Yeah. Boom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a bit about the T20 circuit, you know, like off field, like, you know, playing in the West Indies versus the BBL? Like, you're obviously just going from hotel to hotel, living in airports.
Canada has to be loose. Canada has to be wild.
Yeah. The big difference between Big Bash, I guess, for a local player, is that we stay at home. So I'm in, being from Sydney and playing for Sydney, I stay at home, whereas everywhere else, well, pretty much you're either in the same hotel as every other team or, you know, they're sort of close by. So
is it like an Olympic Village kind of thing? Is there a lot of party? Like, run us through.
The bar's an Olympic Village, yeah. Canada was awesome fun. Some great golf courses, and every night pretty much after the game, because you played so late in the evening, so you sort of got that morning to just sleep it off.
Right.
Sleep off the dust, wake up and... You know, best when fresh, as a few players like to say. And so it was just, the bar was full every night. You sort of chew the fat, talk rubbish, and then kick on.
Yeah.
What do you do to kind of unwind after a big kind of local derby here in Sydney? Like, you go home, obviously. Like, what's your kind of routine? Just home, bed?
Yes, it's pretty boring, to be fair. And here, like,
especially if you win, you kind of want to go out and then not come home, but you're just kind of
Sydney
going home.
Lockout laws. Yeah, there's not much fun. So you want to win away from home, really, if you do that. Like, I remember when we won at BBL 05 MCG, I left the change rooms at about 5 a.m. and we had champagne breakfast when we got back to the hotel, which was pretty cool. So I had no sleep, straight on the plane. And thank God they didn't interview me when we landed in Sydney, and Ben Rohrer had to take it on. So I thought he did.
He's got less to lose.
I was still bouncing off the walls. But yeah, here it's pretty safe. Whereas Caribbean, awesome party. Guyana, they absolutely love it where I play.
Yeah.
There's one bar in Guyana called Palm. It's pretty much Guyana. You're in the bar in the called Palm Court, or you're stuck in your hotel. So everyone from the game goes there and just. The dancing's unbelievable.
Right.
Yeah.
I remember when we interviewed Brendan Julian, that was 3 years ago now, he asked us if we'd been to the Caribbean.
Yeah.
And we said no, and he said, don't go. He didn't like it. And then he asked us if we've ever lifted the Sheffield Shield, and we said, no, we have not done that.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's just...
He was a lovely bloke.
I'd recommend it.
But you're up for it. It's good.
Yeah. 100%. Yeah. Yeah, it's awesome.
You strike me as slightly more self-aware than Brendan Julian.
Yeah.
Did you remember your names? He struggles remembering people's names on the commentary. So
there's no way.
I think he calls me Cameron Green every time, and Cameron Green, Chris Green. So.
Yeah.
He told us to go and get him from the green room a minute before I did, and I went and got him and said, who are you? So, you know, that's just...
He did see us at the SCG in the members bar maybe a few weeks after we did the podcast and just said, boys!
Yeah.
So he's never actually asked to know any of our names. Right. If we're all together, he can just use the colloquial grouping, mate, boys.
A lot of people do that, to be fair,
So obviously, Chris, you were playing the other night in Canberra, and you have played around the world, and, you know, the matted pitches of Norway.
Yeah.
Have you ever had a match abandoned due to climate change?
No, not as yet. ScoMo needs to get onto that. We saw him obviously for that PM's game before.
He was pretty keen to be around then.
He was. Get the drinks running in.
What was his chat like?
He's from the Shire. Right, so it's very Bogany. You know, I'm from Manly, so I'm way off the Shire.
Yeah.
Shire's like proper down, down the sticks.
Yeah. Was he handing out Hillsong leaflets on the field? Was he?
No, he didn't actually. Yeah. No, I thought he was going to run out bare feet though.
Yeah,
walking on water.
But he didn't have much chat. He said a few sly comments to Farwood, which was interesting.
Yeah. I'm scared to ask what he said.
Yeah. Don't be scared.
No, he basically said to Farwood, he's like, "Oh, I'm glad we got your process through because you're doing really well." And Farwood's like, "Well, it was Julia Gillard, mate. Wrong government."
That's fucking incredible.
Yeah.
So that's incredible.
I'm glad we did that thing so you can explore your livelihood.
He probably thought he was Pavel.
What a good bloke.
Farwood hasn't had some great interactions with our government, unfortunately.
Mm.
Yeah.
Not surprised.
Two prime ministers, some dodgy comments towards him. Tony Abbott was another one.
Yeah.
That's
good.
What did he say to Tony Abbott? Or what did Tony Abbott say to him?
Tony said to him, he said, "Which boat did you come off?"
Right.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. It's like, nice. Great one, mate.
Yeah.
Thanks for that.
Well, yeah, it's a shame. Australia, right? Wasn't there the other night.
Yeah, it was disappointing, but, you know, it was actually really bad. In all honesty, they probably should have called it off before those two or three balls that were bowled.
He must have still been going, "Oh, fucking Blocker didn't pick it up. Blocker Wilson didn't pick it up at square leg. Four more balls and points."
But
it must have been so weird.
It was weird. The night before was worse. We had a team dinner and like we sort of sitting outside and just really dizzy. Yeah. And then it just came from nowhere. The wind obviously changed and it just rolled in and it just got bad. Yeah.
Matt, and you sort of knew as soon as it came on, like the Fox Sports commentators were trying to keep it alive, but as soon as it came on, you knew, especially watching Cal Ferguson, like this is over now.
Yeah, so, it was done. Yeah. And that was, I mean, arguably if they called it off and just said, "Right, we're done," then people wouldn't have hung around, but because they didn't really say, the crowd still waited for another hour, so everyone was sort of sitting in the
spot. What were they waiting for? Like, just new policy to be enacted?
Because there were four balls, the cutoff time was like 9:15, so they had to wait 50 minutes for that to be officially shaking hands.
Hmm.
Whereas they should have said, "Right, let's common sense here. It's pretty bad. It's dangerous."
Good effort. Chat in the dressing room after, like, just match abandoned smoke. You know, like what are you guys? Are you going? Oh, circuit. Glad that's over. Let's get out.
Yeah, Mooseheads. We actually did get close to a team circuit at Mooseheads, which was cool. But we'd been on the road for a while, so we'd actually didn't even talk about it. You know, you'd probably take 2.5 from three in a fast start, so to be 5 out of 6 points with the long tournament was really cool. So we just sort of spoke about that. We had training today, obviously, so Christmas is, we got a nice break over Christmas, and then we come back together to take on the Sixers at the SCG, which would be good.
Man, what a life. I just like listening to like your stories about traveling around the world playing cricket, living your dream, but at the same time it must be like exhausting sometimes, you know, like even recently saw like Glenn Maxwell, for instance, like just said, I've been on this carousel for like 6 years or whatever. It has to be exhausting. As much as you'd be loving it, it's got to be tiring at points as well, right?
Oh, look, it is. Like anything, you know, I'm very fortunate, as you say, to be living my absolute dream. If you asked me this, you know, 5-6 years ago and told me what I was going to be doing, I would have laughed at you and probably said, "Nah, mate," walked away.
Yeah. We did ask you, and it was hurtful when you laughed.
Boys.
Yeah, boys. that was you in the Nets 5 years.
Yeah, right.
Following
the third
those
net, off. Yeah.
On the Astros. that does get tiring, especially, you know, I think time away from home, in, you know, foreign beds. I still remember my first PSL. I was like, how cool is this? You get to unpack in a hotel room. That luxury wore off in a week and you're like, there's a lot of staring in your four walls and there's only so much Netflix you can watch. And it sounds like massive first world problems, but it does just sort of build up and it can become stale overseas when sort of all you've got to get out is cricket. So when you do have that time off, particularly in some places where, you know, you can't leave the hotel.
Right.
You're sort of stuck.
Pretty grim, yeah. We had the same thing. We were touring with the podcast. We got to like Adelaide and then Perth and it was like, it was pretty tough.
Yeah.
Don't know how they live out here.
Yeah, KP feels the same way about Brisbane, I think.
Fucking, he goes hard on Brisbane, doesn't he?
Yeah.
He's really doubled down on that stuff.
Yeah, I saw he tweeted about our first game. Said, good to open the Big Bash there and get it out of the way.
Yeah.
Is it much, like, I perceive, I could be wrong, but like that there's a lot more effort put in by players to kind of burnish their brand when it comes to T20 cricket. Like we were talking to a guy the other night at a club function we did who plays in the BBL, remains nameless, who was like considering
I
don't think so. Considering his like hairstyle, you know, for the BBL, but it was like, oh, I don't know if I want to do it because, you know, players will get into me. But he was like, no, you've got to do it, you know, you've got to get yourself out there. Yeah. And now you've got the opportunity to sort of go around and like, you know, interview players on the mic and stuff like that. You were talking about Ash Nagar and Adam Zampa. I mean, Zampa obviously now has a brand as the rare unit. Yeah. You know, that might help him stay in the side a little bit. You know, do you consider these things when it comes to your, you know, achieving your T20 goals, maybe getting picked up by a franchise? Like, it helps you get picked up if you know you can bring social media followers and stuff like that.
It's an interesting one. I think some of the smaller leagues would definitely look at that sort of stuff, especially in trying to help them gain a profile. So those sort of Canada leagues starting up for the first time. I know T10 were big on that in the first 2 years. A lot of social media. The big dogs obviously have a big following, so they want to try and get them in. The big thing with Yuvraj Singh in Canada recently was a massive draw because that brought in the Indian crowd. So I think it's definitely there, but I don't know. In terms of me, I try and keep it simple. Otherwise, you sort of overcomplicate. I do need a haircut, so I do need to get a TV.
Your branding is that you're fucking unbelievably good looking. Yeah. That's your brand.
Are you aware that that's
just
brand?
A statement?
So just don't get hit in the face or
don't get hit in the face. Right. Oh, don't even joke about that, Chris.
Why are you on the edge of your seat?
I'm edging.
Yeah. You got to wear your grill up a bit higher, like they do in under 11s as well, just to protect that face, man.
Yeah, Stoinis did that, didn't he? When you get out, like you put the lid like on top of the.
We got to let the camera get as much face time as possible.
He should be in a singlet.
Him and
Hilton Cartwright. I was watching them bat the other day. They're massive.
Yeah.
And you like one of these guys.
I've done so much chest and pipes. I don't think I'll ever get
there. Really? You're sort of being humble before talking about just bowling around the wicket offers and getting caught at long on. But all your stats are quite good. You know, you go for the least amount of runs and Ponting was saying, Chris Green, he bowls around the wicket into the heels and stuff. Like, are you one of these sort of are you nerdish about T20 cricket? Like, do you consume the data or do you just have a method and go? It just seems to work for me.
I don't, in terms of data, I don't look too much into it. It's just more about, I've got a very simple game plan about trying to hit for as least amount of runs as possible. Often I won't even try and take a wicket, which sounds stupid, but I think in my role, being an off spinner, I think in cricket and in T20 cricket, most batters are thinking there's no threat here. Yeah. So it's an easy opportunity to score 10 plus. I think you just go to any net session and you watch an off spinner in the nets and everyone at club cricket to professional cricket is running down trying to hit him out of the nets just to look good. So that's the default. So I know that if I can build pressure up on that and if I don't get them out, then it obviously creates opportunity at the other end. And it's literally the method to my madness.
And the breath you take before you bowl, that to me, that just looks like goal kicking. You know, like you're obviously a goal kicking fan from rugby union, rugby league. Who have you modelled that breath on? Hazem El-Mezri?
I'm more rugby union than rugby league. Maybe I should bring in the Johnny Wilkinson, stick the hands out before I bowl next game. That'd be cool. It actually came about, funnily enough, my first year at the Thunder, we had a free diver come in. So we had Mark Matthews come in and talk to us about obviously big wave surfing and handling pressure, and basically he forces himself to smile when he falls off under those big waves to relax his body, because when you smile you can't be tense.
Which
I found crazy because I've been like washing machine before and there's no way I'm going to be smiling just down smiling there straight away. I'm like, oh! I'll be dead in a second. And then we had a free diver come in and he basically took us into the pool. And he said, right, go under and hold your breath as long as you can.
Nice.
Healthy.
And we were like, so yeah, obviously it was safe practice. You had a man checking your fingers and seeing if you're still breathing. And I think I lasted...
But this is cricket training.
This is cricket training. Yeah, you're a cricket trainer.
Is he on a retainer? Because there's a lot of air pollution around and it could be quite beneficial going forward just to be able to breathe.
It was a while ago.
Oh, okay.
Breathe the current. But I lasted about 45 seconds and he brought us up and taught us about relaxing through our breath. And I went for nearly 2 minutes. So I was like amazed by it. And I just thought, right, I've got to incorporate this in my cricket. And I went to the big, where I lift my shoulders up. And I guess, now it looks a bit silly, but
Do you incorporate that in the rest of your life? You just try and smile and breathe really deeply when things aren't going well?
I think like relationships
and stuff in a fight.
Yeah, massive. Yeah, Bella sprays me all the time when it happens. When she knows she's wrong, I do a big breath and don't want to argue. She's like, oh, yeah, here we go. Yeah,
he's going into bowl again.
Yeah, he's going to bowl.
Yeah.
Four of a spill. Here we go. Round the wicket.
Yeah. 24 balls.
Nice one. All right. Well, thanks for joining us, man. I'm sure that was the most normal interview you've done.
Really Chris, normal.
But yeah. Wishing you the best for the rest of the season with the Thunder and the 18,000 other clubs you play for.
Yeah, thank
and
you.
Also for your national ambitions ahead of the World T20.
No, I appreciate
year.
It.
You'll be close.
Thank you. No, thanks. A lot of these questions I'm going to have to use when I go on the roving mic on Channel 7, so I have to steal some of them.
Yeah. We'll talk about that later.
Yeah.
No, thanks for having me, guys.
Okay, it's time to talk Budgie Smuggler, boys. And we're going to steer away from the classic smuggler this week to talk about the accessories, to talk about the things that Budgie Smuggler has, like bum bags, flap caps, stubby coolers, gateway products, if you will. He goes, what are your favourite gateway products?
Products?
Yeah. Loose term.
What are my favourite gateway products? Mm.
You know, when you have one thing and then it leads you to have more things.
I understand the concept of gateway products.
You know the computer company, Gateway? What's your favourite modem by Gateway?
That's specific. I don't know. Bum bags. I'm looking at these things on Budgie's website, and it's a great time of the year to have all these accessories because it's a great kind of retro-y, cultural Australiana, bright colours and stuff. Summer, hot, obviously the smoke.
Everyone wants to tell you the rules of backyard cricket at the moment.
Yeah, yeah, and you kind of like
every single man and his dog.
Exactly, yeah. And we get asked about that and we do spots on radio.
We do spots on radio.
Yeah, quite funny actually. Yeah. So I'm kind of thinking, basically, I'm thinking out loud, it's just like all those gateway things. Like, it's a perfect time of year to have all those things, bum bags. When was the last time you wore a bum bag? It's only in summer you can wear a bum bag.
Okay.
It's not a winter product.
Right. Yeah.
You're asking me
what are your favourite gateway products?
Okay. Yeah, cool. Look, I think a gateway for me is the gift card that Budgie Smuggler offers, also on their website.
Oh, is it?
It's because it's a gateway into an actual product.
Yeah.
But I think gift cards are actually the perfect way
to
outsource the problem of actually having to buy a physical gift for a loved one.
True.
You can just attach a kind of arbitrary monetary value to the love that you hold for them in the form of a gift card from Budgie Smuggler.
Lads, as you know, I went out yesterday.
Yeah.
As we go to wear. And one of the guys who came along to the lunch brought along gifts, and he gave like a couple of guys like bottles of wine and stuff. And we're just about to go out, so I had to fucking lug around.
Yeah.
But I got a gift voucher. And that's perfect. It's a real, a guy thing is like, just give me the cash, mate.
Yep.
Just give me the cash.
Yep.
Yeah. That's what you want.
Uh-huh.
Mm. So what I'm saying is Dave is right.
Yeah. Okay.
And the gift card is the answer.
Okay. And then when you give someone a gift card, you can always say, well, because I just thought you could choose what you wanted.
Oh, I didn't want to make a mistake.
Yeah. I wanted you to have the freedom to do it and what you actually
It's
mean.
A freedom gift.
Yeah.
It's a gift of freedom.
Gift of freedom.
Yeah.
Freedom-based gift. Selection. Well, okay. So with that in mind, budgiesmuggler.com.au for all your gateway products, most of them, and gift cards.
So hashtag AskTDC, rolling straight in. Hey, boys, last shows. Well, last time to speak about the shows coming up before we actually do them in Melbourne.
Yeah, live shows.
Live shows I'm talking about. Fucking hell, it was a big day yesterday, let me tell you. 27th, 28th of December in Melbourne, the Corner Hotel. Where is that? Is that Richmond?
Yeah,
Richmond. Yeah, you guys are the Melbourne people. Mm-hmm. The Melbourne people are going to come along to see. First show sold out, that's right, isn't it?
Yeah.
First show sold out.
Gone.
Second show is still available. Yeah. Tickets are still available for the 28th. That's a Saturday. That's a big day. I reckon that Saturday is the first day where you lose track of the days of the year, like what day of the week it is.
Mm.
So me promoting that as a Saturday and being excited about that is kind of null and void now that I've said that. But still, it's a Saturday. Yeah. So, you know, no one's going to work.
Day three of the test.
No excuses.
Enough time to have made a real analysis of what's happening in, Melbourne sport generally.
Yeah.
As it relates to footy.
Who's our guest in Melbourne?
John Hastings. John the Duke Hastings.
Yes, the big man.
Who transcends both Sydney grade cricket, Melbourne grade cricket, all three forms for Australia.
Mm.
A rising media talent too. can tell a yarn. And if you just look at him, he's just, you know, anyone's called the Duke. If you just look at the specimen, you just think, oh, mate, you are cricket. You are Australian cricket.
The nickname suits him. It's not an incongruous nickname. You're not like, why did he get that nickname?
Yeah.
It's, he is the Duke.
Yeah. No one's calling him Tiny or something.
No one's calling him Tiny.
How many times do you reckon he walks into a room and says, here he is, he's the big man?
Yeah.
A lot, I reckon. And I'm going to do that immediately. And I'll be doing that on stage. I'll be calling him the big man. Or the great man.
On the cast the other day, he just said, oh, yeah, you and me follically challenged Sammy. I was like, ooh, Sammy, you got to earn that.
Yeah, you got to earn it.
Not for the Duke. He just sort of says what he wants, you know. Yeah. they say, oh, you know, if those walls could talk. No, he's going to talk at the show, which is why he should come.
Yeah, he's being paid to talk. Yeah.
Not much. It's not IPL money.
IPL for some.
Yeah. Yeah. Unfortunately, Pat Cummins was unavailable for us. Couldn't afford $3.5 million. Cool. All right. So that's a thing that's happening. Come along, Melbourne. Come along to the shows. They're great nights out. The last chance for you to see us live until probably next summer, I'm guessing.
Until the next thing we ask you.
Until the next thing we ask.
And yes, and Sydney as well.
Sydney as well. Coming up, Richard Cheekwee. It's kind of, let me tell you, it's a tough day. I'm having a tough day.
Mate, did you get on it yesterday?
Okay. Tipped a few in.
Hey. Good.
Mate, there'll be a fine for you after this.
It's all talking lower registers out the side of our mouth.
And not look at each other, face 90 degrees, side mouth of shit. Mm. Joe writes in, evening, lads. I'm an English bloke currently doing an overseas stint in New Zealand, Napier. After having my hit first this week, I face the prospect of having to roll my arm over for a full hour. After five terrible tweakers in there, was a very loud noise from the other side of the park. It soon became apparent that one of the local wrong'uns was involved in an armed standoff with police. We obviously had to evacuate and were ushered out by a policeman holding a rifle. My question is, am I a terrible person? I was absolutely elated that I was able to leave straight after having a hit, despite the genuine danger of the situation. No one was hurt, although I'm not sure that changes the answer. Good question, Joe. So is it training? Is that a hit? Got a bowl, but there's a fucking armed standoff happen.
It's before or after the recent gun reforms in New Zealand?
Probably after.
Okay.
I mean, of all of the things that happened in this quick story, the one that stands out to me is that he had a hit first before bowling, which suggests to me he's quite a good player. I mean, it's very rare to go to training and be offered or be able to accept a hit in probably the best light.
Yeah.
And just... it's usually what you do when you've got your choice of hit, unless you're waiting for better bowlers to arrive. Yeah, you usually want to kind of get it out of the way.
There's a sweet spot. Yeah.
There is a sweet spot. It's usually two or three in, isn't it?
Yeah, because if you're the first person to have a net, that's one of the worst nets you can get.
Well, that's when you're facing the person at the club who's unemployed.
How come bowlers don't turn up first? It's always first to training a batsman.
Yeah.
Always. And so it's just batsman bowling to batsman. So if you're the first one ever having
blokes are arriving and they're having conversations with the blokes that are bowling. Yep. So there's just, it's not a good flow either of the actual net itself.
A lot of part-time off-spin being faced, that first net.
What are some ways to get an early net? Aside from like turning up, which as we know is not good because you lose a lot of social capital by being there early. Are there any kind of ways you can influence when and how you get a hit?
Well, not having a job is important one if you want to succeed in great cricket.
Less macro, more specifically related to when you actually arrive at the ground.
Like,
can you influence anyone politically?
Well, I only learn about this after my career, but there's a whole like black market. There's a whole silent economy around that kind of stuff with texting the net captain.
Quite Australians.
Speaking of net captain, another person who's usually unemployed or just a lovely club volunteer. We need to keep them around, so let's keep disparaging them like this. So you can text them, you can speak to them, you can give them gifts. They have to declare them to the club, obviously, but for competition purposes, and outside activities. So
can you just start putting your pads on? I remember I started doing that towards the end of my career. I just started putting my pads on.
Yeah. And then bowling.
And then you're just there.
Did you guys ever have the thing where like you were told to put your pads on, then you were like, oh no, sorry, I actually made a mistake. And now you've just got your pads on. You're just sitting down.
Yeah.
You're just a man sitting in a Suburban Oval with your fucking pads on.
Or you're standing at the fictional non-striker's end watching someone else have a good hit.
Yeah.
Yeah. And just waiting, like really wanting to get in there, and they just ask for one more repeatedly until it's sundown, then you go and kill yourself.
Anyway, speaking of that, I'm glad that no one was hurt with the rifle and stuff, but I don't think you're a terrible person, Joe, for being happy that you got a hit.
Well, he probably is a terrible person, but not necessarily for that.
Okay, Leighton Uzzi, was that name was put in there? Yeah, Leighton Uzzi. It looks like Leighton on the screen, but Leighton Uzzi.
Good point.
Thanks for the question. A question for Higos. This is a nice question, actually. I read this before. You'll both enjoy this. A question for here goes, your delivery in particular reminds me a lot of H.G. Nelson, and to a certain extent, Dave reminds me of Roy. Were you fans of Roy and H.G.? Or are you a little too young to have appreciated their glory days? This sporting life was a good grade cricket substitute during winter. It went all afternoon on a Saturday, during which I could listen to blokes talking rubbish whilst not interacting with the missus.
I think HG is more professional than me today. I'll say that. I don't think my. What do you guys reckon? I don't think I sound like him at all.
You do have an intensity and energy that he sometimes exudes.
In the intro. His intros are probably a little bit more like abstract. They start wandering off into play. Like it's hard to keep up with the metaphors and the analogies.
Right, okay.
That's, yeah.
So he's good, you say.
I am, yeah.
He's a consummate professional, yeah. That's why he's been around for 30 plus years.
Yeah, obviously Roy and HG, the Kings. Huge fans. Dave, you'd be the same.
Yeah, I remember I actually found out when I was living in Balmain that I lived 8 doors down from Roy, a childhood hero of mine.
Yeah.
You know, and it was just around when we published Tea and No Sympathy, I think, and I contemplated, and I think I mentioned to you guys, I was really thinking seriously about putting a book in his letterbox with like a nice note saying, you've been quite influential to me.
Yeah.
Because once I did see him in the garden, I just started seeing him everywhere in Balmain, just walking with his wife, you know, in his gym clothes. I just couldn't not see him. He was everywhere to me.
So the same as like when you're buying a car, then you see the car everywhere?
Yeah.
You were buying Roy.
Same thing. Yeah. But I just never did it because I'm a scared little cuck. Yeah. And now I don't live in Balmain anymore.
Yeah.
I guess I could still do it because I know where he still lives.
And you may still do it.
And I may still do it. Maybe I will do it.
It's a wonderful compliment to both of you to be compared to those two. They are the Kings.
To a certain extent, though, for me. He goes, is H.G. Nelson, according to the question.
John Doyle is a national treasure, in my view. Yeah. And his 2005 Andrew Wally lecture on the media is something very much...
Why are you not blinking?
Yeah.
My voice is getting gradually softer. Sounds already soft on this podcast, apparently. So.
Yeah.
Okay, next one. Rowan Phillip. It's a quick one. Why do we bump fists or tap bats at the end of each over?
Well, we don't fucking tap bats if you're a normal person.
I've always found that to be a bit non-consensual. Like if someone comes up and taps your bat with their bat.
There's been an evolution in this because like at the end of my great cricket days, it just started to come in where it was acceptable to like bump fists, a fist bump. Whereas like when we were all playing in like our peak, it was like, what the fuck are you doing?
What's his touch?
What's this touching shit? What the fuck are you doing?
It was blokes yuck. Like tapping your pad with their bat as well.
See, that's the evolution of like from a fist bump. Now it's like bat taps.
Wouldn't it get the fuck away from bat?
Yeah.
Wouldn't it kind of leave a little dent in your bat as well?
So the Pakistanis the Pakistanis during the Test match they were doing it.
Do they actually make the contact? Is it edge to edge or is it full face? It's
edge to middle.
So someone adopts the edge and someone face hits the middle of the bat.
Someone's always the submissive.
Yeah.
So face to face
seems very erotic.
Yeah.
And how do you get that as well? That's difficult with the surface area.
Yeah.
The bat's presumably like underarmed at each other.
I thought it was face on face. Face on face.
Maybe it is, yeah.
It'd be better if it was more like a sword fight. You just actually like play a pull shot into each other's bat. I'd start getting behind that.
More broadly, why do we do it? Is it like you're holding hands with your partner walking down the street? Like it's a signifier of the devotion. You don't need to do it.
We're
sometimes
together.
It's uncomfortable to do it, but you do it.
Bat energy. Like the reverberation of the bat hitting vibrates into your body and you in turn take that energy and it's like the male spirit and wood and bats.
It's like Street Fighter.
I can only presume that's what I mean. It's a ritualistic expression of intimacy among cricketers.
Men touching men. Does anyone want to read the last
one? I'll read this one. I'll read this one. This one is from...
My brain hurts.
This one's from Right Arm Long Hop.
Nice.
Dear Ask TGC, I hope all is well and wondered if you could help with some dream analysis. As a retired, brackets, fucking village cricketer from the UK, I haven't felt a desperate need to don the whites for a while, but recently had a troubling dream that made me question that presumption. I work for a multinational real estate company in a position of relative obscurity. Essentially, I bat eight and don't bowl. However, I recently dreamt I was at our swanky central London head office and was called into a meeting by the CEO and other members of the top brass. Never going to happen, like an acknowledgement from someone in first grade when you've just started a new club. Not sure what the meeting was about, but imagine my surprise as I enter the room to see the three members of the grade cricketer locked in deep conversation with the powers that be. My dream offered no explanation as to what I or you were doing there and has so left me at a loss as to what it's all about. Were you trying to obtain new sponsorship, perhaps brokering a deal over some prime Sydney real estate, or trying to find some brand synergy between TGC and a somewhat depressing corporate giant? Or was this more of a sign of the lack of success in my own career and the hope that because I listened to the TGC podcast, for some reason you'd know who I was and so might be telling our CEO that I was clearly an alpha who deserved fast tracking to the top? Who knows? Who cares? Thoughts welcome nonetheless. Many thanks and wishing you all a very happy Christmas and thank you for the previous year's entertainment.
Paige, you're talking before about compliments. Like, this could be the ultimate compliment, like that we're now appearing in other men's dreams. Together, always together, never separately, never individually.
Yeah, it could be.
Coming into the psyche.
I have to apologise because I read this question this morning and it prompted me to make contact with my mother-in-law, who is a psychologist and who runs a dream analysis group on the side.
Well, this is going to be good.
Fuck me.
Easy. So, fucking cow and sledging my wife at the corner last year. But she runs a dream analysis group, and it has meant that, like, through her life, my wife, obviously is her daughter, has been encouraged to, like, write down her dreams and to take them seriously, which has obviously been, invited me to ridicule that incorrectly. Yep. But what it does mean is that she has these really vivid dreams. Like, you know, we'll wake up, Tori will be like, oh, do you have any dreams? I'm like, yeah, I saw some shapes and shit.
Yeah. How'd you hit him?
Yeah. What'd you do? She's like, oh, I was riding a dolphin in Sydney Harbour. You know, something. Some amazing narrative.
Yeah.
Mine's just like squares.
Yeah.
So I'd meant to get in touch with mother-in-law Jan. Hello, if you're listening. To analyse this dream. She would have been very put off by the content of it. But so I can't. I'm not sure how to kind of like channel Jan here and analyse this dream. I mean, when you did say, right arm long hop, if that's your real name, that we're struggling with some brand synergy between TGC and a depressing corporate giant. Well, that's just real life for us.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Any suggestions, please let us know.
Hmm. Well, we're always looking for new sponsorship. So, I mean...
40 winks. Sleep Factory.
Open to any multinational who wants to get into business with us.
Yeah. It's quite nice having like relationship with people across the world, like you know that we get to speak into these people's ears. It's nice, and now they're dreaming about.
Back in the day, you had to be like a pen pal or like an email.
Yeah, this is way easier. This is way quicker.
This is better than getting in a chat room.
Yeah,
presumably that means that Right Arm Long Hot knows what we look like as well, which means someone he might have come to the show us on TV.
So. He might have come to London show.
Yeah, unlikely.
I'm pretty sure our show is geo-blocked for overseas. See comments from time to time saying, like, can you make this available?
Yeah.
Maybe he doesn't know what we look like. If you just had to visualise what we look like via our voices, that would be an interesting study.
Be like Pez's shapes, squares and, like, rectangles and shit.
We just see shapes.
You know, like, the old shapes of the screensavers on, like, you know, Windows 93? You know, when it went to the screensaver?
They're
my dreams.
Yeah. Normal stuff. All right, well, Christmas is here. Boys, I wish you the very happiest of Christmases to you two in this room.
And to you and yours.
Thanks,
you
mate.
And yours.
Yeah, you know, I've got no one.
No one will survive you.
Thanks as ever to all the people out there downloading this podcast, listening through your ears right now, wherever you are right across the world. We appreciate it as ever. We'll see you next year, the last of 2019. Cheers.